You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday.
I tell them that, like, they are valid. They are, you know, they're human beings. They have dignity. They should be able to learn something that, you know, an IU student can learn.
That was Marcus Dickinson on teaching inmates through the nonprofit New Leaf, New Life's outreach programs. We'll hear more in our community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, the latest on robocalls and scammers on this week's Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware.
And teaching teens about money, how best to do it. We'll have tips for you from the Ins and Outs of Money, a financial literacy project from the Monroe County Public Library. That's coming up later in the program. But first, your daily headlines.
Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill is trying to block two women from testifying about allegations of sexual misconduct as he faces a disciplinary hearing on separate claims that he drunkenly groped four women at a bar last year. The state's attorney disciplinary commission wants the women to testify about Hill's actions when he was the Elkhart County prosecutor. Hill became Indiana's attorney general in 2017. The General Gazette reports that one could testify about Hill's inappropriate sexual innuendo and propositions directed to her. According to the Associated Press, Hill's lawyers argue in legal findings that such testimony about unrelated events shouldn't be allowed at Hill's professional misconduct hearing next week. The hearing could lead to actions ranging from reprimands to disbarment. The four women accused Hill of touching their backs or buttocks during a party.
Monroe County Commissioners distributed $58,000 grant dollars today to local agencies working to combat drug and alcohol abuse. The state's Drug-Free Communities grant funds are funded by court fees and awarded through the Monroe County CARES Board. CARES is a local coordinating council that evaluates grant applications from justice, treatment, and prevention programs in Monroe County. Steve Malone of the CARES Board told the commissioners more grant money is being distributed this year.
We have probably about $10,000 more than we've had in the past couple of years, which I'm not really sure what to attribute it to, other than the fact, I think I mentioned at the council last week, that Eric Oliphant, our prosecutor, made a conscientious effort to make sure that any plea bargains that may have been dropped a little bit, that she made sure that these fees were collected, so that may have something to do with it. We were pretty judicious on making sure that the board itself did not take as much money as we would be able to give to the grantees, which is our goal every year, just to sustain the board.
This year's grantees include Amethyst House, Big Brothers Big Sisters, Rhino's Youth Club, Courage to Change, Indiana University Police Department, and Shalom Community Center. Monroe County's problem-solving courts and community corrections were also awarded grant funding. The Monroe County CARES Board retains $5,000 for administrative expenses. Malone also said the grant application process is being revised to appeal to more agencies.
We are in the process of readjusting our problem statements and goals this year to make it more appealable to other agencies to apply for grants. That's our goal this year. So we've come up with some new problem statements and goals for that as well.
In the same meeting, Public Works Director Lisa Ridge said the county itself has been awarded $508,000 from Community Crossings grants. The Indiana Department of Transportation awards the matching grants in support of local road and bridge improvements.
The projects that we submitted this round was paving the whole subdivision of Van Buren. It's one of our older subdivisions. And then a bridge replacement on Old Dutch Church Road. Also in Van Buren, we had started the task this year of starting to replace sidewalks in that subdivision. So looking forward to getting those done, and the roads and the bridge will be done in 2020.
The next meeting of the Monroe County Board of Commissioners is scheduled for October 23rd.
One item on the agenda for the Monroe County Plan Commission was rezoning a former farm and farmhouse to allow for light industrial use. Monroe County Planner Drew Myers explains what this means.
This is the final hearing. We've heard this a number of times now, so I will go through another summary and background with you guys here tonight. So if rezoned, the petitioner is asking for a rezone from pre-existing business to light industrial. If rezoned, any property owner would be required to meet all appropriate design standards pertaining to the light industrial zoning district, as well as commercial site plan standards for any proposed business that may operate at the site. That includes, but not limited to, parking requirements, landscaping, lighting, and grading and erosion control requirements.
Many neighbors of the property spoke up against the rezoning during the commission's public comment period. Erica Morris, who owns the farm next door with her husband, said this is not the first time she's complained about the proposed rezoning.
We stood before you a month ago asking for continuance, and we've gone another month. And unfortunately, the petitioner isn't even here tonight to defend their position. As Drew stated, they had said publicly on record they would have a list of 12 items that they wanted to see at this site the next day. That has not been presented. We have not seen it, which has given us no grounds. Furthermore, as time has gone on, we've seen different things come out of the planning staff. We've seen conflicting things about what would be required for the drive expansion, including sidewalks. And obviously with sidewalks, that's going to have an even larger impact on our property. Which sidewalks in this rural community, where are we gonna walk to? The other things that are impacted by this rezone is the Limestone Greenway, and also all of our neighbors who are adjacent to it.
Morris continued focusing on the land's uncertain future and what that could mean for the area.
By rezoning from pre-existing business, which is light, to light industrial, it brings open the uses of light, medium, and heavy intensities, which is a very large difference from a site that is currently zoned for light intensity. That could have an even larger impact on all of us.
Duncan Campbell of the Monroe County Historic Preservation Board also spoke about the area's uncertain future, as well as touching on its recent history.
The dilemma to the in the neighborhood is obviously what has happened as the highways were built and new uses were sought for adjacent lands that were separated from the original farmstead. And it's been in limbo for a long time because the uses are pretty nonspecific by planning. And only really threaten the farmstead and its integrity because of the unknown that's there about how these places will mature and develop and the kinds of things that will come in. And as most of you know, planning and zoning found their home in New York City in order to separate uses that were noxious to one another. And that's the premise upon which planning and zoning is based still today, that we try to put uses in places where they're most appropriate.
Although the staff was in favor of the petition to rezone, the commission voted to send a negative recommendation to the Monroe County Commissioners.
Unionville Elementary School Principal Lily Albright has been selected as a 2019 recipient of the Terrell H. Bell Award for Outstanding School Leadership. The award will be presented to Albright by the U.S. Department of Education at the National Blue Ribbon School Ceremony in Washington, D.C. on November 14th. This award recognizes outstanding school leaders and the vital role they play in guiding students and schools to excellence, frequently under challenging circumstances. The principals nominated for this award are committed to fostering successful teaching and learning at their schools to help their students meet high standards. It is named for former U.S. Secretary of Education, Terrell H. Bell. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-Line. Cardinal Spirits Kitchen features local seasonal foods made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner is available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street.
Marcus Dickinson is the vice president of New Leaf, New Life, a volunteer-run organization that offers programs both inside and outside the Monroe County Correctional Center that promote successful reentry into society. In today's Community Report, WFHB correspondent Sydney Foreman talks with Dickinson about teaching linguistics to inmates.
Marcus, I'm so happy to have you here today, and I'm excited to talk with you.
Thank you, Sydney. I'm happy to be here, too.
So what exactly is it that you do with your volunteer work in the jails?
Well, it's a good question. So I've been volunteering with New Leaf, New Life for maybe close to 10 years now. My background is actually in linguistics, so I taught at IU for a number of years in linguistics, and so the study of language. So what I do in the jail, when I go in, I just teach. I sometimes put teach in quotes because it's just a kind of a casual conversation at times. Mm-hmm. I teach about language and culture and analytical thinking at times, even sometimes like more mathematical things, but that's not always as well received. But the language and culture things people enjoy. So what I do is I come in and provide, I like to say, kind of a glimpse of the outside world. So it's sort of, if you're thinking about, if you're stuck inside somewhere for a long time, mm-hmm. It helps, I think, to know that the world is much larger than what you have in front of you. And so it's just nice to see those different kinds of distinctions and different ways of thinking get pulled into kind of a conversation for people who are incarcerated.
Absolutely, so, yeah. So is that something that you had to get a degree in professing, or is that kind of anyone can come in and do these casual?
You do not need a degree like that to go teach for New Leaf, New Life, or to do mm-hmm. volunteer work in the jail. We actually have a lot of different kinds of volunteering opportunities. Many of our volunteer opportunities actually are outside the jail right now, in terms of like, we have, they call them kites, little notes that people write that need to be filled. And so we have a kite night where people, you know, respond to these requests for eyeglasses or birth certificates or applications for treatment centers. And in terms of like our other classes are things like creative writing, and I think we have two different creative writing classes. One's a poetry class specifically. And we also have like a meditation class, and there are, New Leaf doesn't do them as much, but there are GED classes, and we also do life skills classes. We've been doing those more the last year, just general life skills classes. But people don't have advanced degrees who are teaching these. It's people who care and know something about some part of the world, uh-huh. or are willing to like do the legwork and the research to find out more about this. And so it's a lot of different people who are volunteering in different capacities, and some of that, like the life skills stuff, we also offer outside of the jail because that's something, you know, you need life skills both inside and outside, ideally more so even outside once you're released from incarceration. But so far people seem okay with this, you know, bringing in like some sort of esoteric knowledge or whatever. Uh-huh. And part of that is too, like, and I tell the people, the students, the guys I work with in there, and I should point out that my class is all guys, but there are classes for both men and women in the jail. Mm-hmm. I tell them that, like, they are valid. They are, you know, they're human beings. They have dignity. They should be able to learn something that, you know, an IU student can learn. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I want to teach them something that, like, is that I find interesting, and I think some of them will at least find interesting. And that is, like, it doesn't have to be like, oh, here's the most basic thing. Let's make sure you just get that. And some people are bored with that. And it's like, this can spur on kind of conversations that go off in different directions, and sometimes I start to find out, oh, this, you know, this person's really interested in kind of like, how would you do this on a computer? And this, you know, so they have that kind mm-hmm. of thinking, and this person really is more socially conscious. And so, like, want to, you know, encourage fostering that. And it's interesting sometimes how, I'm sure this is true of many fields, but just as we discuss language and we discuss the people who are using the language, that it just opens up other conversations. You know, I can help encourage people to pursue other interests beyond just what we're talking about.
Yeah, then. Absolutely. Yeah. Would you be able to then like point them to different classes that you know of that other people are teaching within the jails or?
Well, it's interesting. So in the jail itself, it's a little, just to give a bit more context. So we teach in, there's one room that we can teach in. And so they have to bring people in from the cell blocks. So there's eight different blocks in the jail. Mm-hmm. And so it's only one block at a time. So the programming is limited per block. It's kind of like each block gets at least one self-care class and one sort of life skills class. It's hard to recommend other things right now. It's more kind of like long-term. Like if someone, you know, from the county jail, they're either, generally speaking, they're going to be released or they're going to go to prison. And so in either case, it's sort of thinking about their own futures. So mm-hmm. kind of, you know, in prison, they're typically, because it's more long-term, there are typically more educational opportunities so they can think about the kinds of things. Even just the idea of being educated and wanting to get an education like that and placing value on that, I think we help foster that in the jail. And then if you're going, you know, if they're being released, to think about, maybe not immediately, because once someone's released, there are a lot of, typically there are a lot of different issues they have to face.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, once they're thinking more long term about their plans to, you know, figure out what piece education fits into that. So I actually did a lot with, when I was in linguistics, of dealing with computers and language and getting mm-hmm. computers to process language. I ran into a guy recently around town who taught me a lot about computing. He knew a lot about things I did not know about with computing. And I ran into him recently and he's taking classes at Ivy Tech. Like I was really, it was one of those moments where, you know, I got a little emotional, just like I tried not to show it to him, mm-hmm. but I got a little emotional of like, you know, he is like pursuing, and he was like really yeah. smart guy. It's just, you know, circumstances and in many cases addictions, or there's like, there are a lot of things that are factoring in into where a person is at in life. I mean, I've taught IU students and I've taught, you know, inmates in the county jail and it's like, you see the same range of intellectual capacity. And mm-hmm. so it's, to encourage that it's an exciting thing for people who haven't had as many opportunities. You know, it's one of the best feelings in the world to encounter someone on the outside who's pursuing something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I'll just mention on that note that we have a couple people on our board that are formerly incarcerated and they were in my class. And it's like, it just, every time I think about that, like, again, I get a little emotional. It's like, yes. These guys, they were wonderful and they were so smart and like had so many things to contribute inside.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, you know, we're working together as peers on the board, and like that's like how life should be. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. once they're able to have enough support and make the changes they need to make and have community around them help them, they're able to thrive.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
Absolutely inspiring. Yeah. I think yeah.
yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. Inspiring is a better word than cool, but like still like
So you said they have like the blocks only do yeah, one class yeah. at a time. Yeah. So is this something that they have to do while they're there or
no,
is it totally optional?
It's totally
for them?
Optional. So I may have like, you know, I may have one person show up to class. I may have six or seven. Like it's completely optional.
Mm-hmm.
In an ideal world, we could offer even more things because I think there are more opportunities and just different types of things appeal to different people. Like not mm-hmm. everyone wants to go to a class about language, especially when it's like they have to be woken up and be like, hey, do you want to go to class? And it's like, well, I was sleeping. So what's it about? Okay. I mean, it was one of those things for years I was teaching and the people there, you know, they'd say, we really appreciate you coming in. And I'd be like, they're just, you know, they're giving me a line. And the more I got to know people, I was like, no, they actually, mm-hmm. they are being very truthful. They appreciate people coming in and taking the time to just say, like I said before, like, you are a valid human being. I want to just like spend time and like, this is what I'm interested in. I want to share it with you and I hope you're interested in it. But it really is more about that. For me, at least, it's a lot about that relationship. I also want them to learn in a context where that I think they should be using their brain, that they have a brain and they should be using it. And like they may or may not always get that message. I don't know.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Marcus.
Yeah,
it was a
thanks,
pleasure
Sydney.
Talking with you.
Yes.
For WFHB, this is Sydney Foreman.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, it's the ins and outs of money, providing economic education and community resources that keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing.
It's the Ins and Outs of Money, presented by the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. Quick tips for getting control of your money, no matter how big or small your income or family is.
Hello, and welcome to the Ins and Outs of Money. It's me, Christina, with the It's Your Money Project. If you have a teenager at home, you know that money can be an issue of major contention between you and them. But as a parent, you are your child's most influential role model, particularly when it comes to managing finances. So what are you teaching them and how are you teaching it? Here are some tips for teaching teens how to manage their money the smart way. Start with teaching kids to keep a budget. For teenagers, a monthly allowance as opposed to a weekly or daily one might be a good idea to consider. It encourages them to make their money last throughout the month, and a written budget can really help with that. Start by helping your teen write down everything they spend their money on for a few weeks, then organizing those expenditures into categories like food, clothing, and entertainment. Seeing where their money goes gives a realistic idea of where they need to be more disciplined in their spending. It's also a great time to encourage them to put aside a portion of their money as savings. Another lesson in budgeting may be to let your teen plan a family vacation or day out within an amount set by you. Looking at the price of tickets, gas, and lunch, and whatever else, they'll get experience with real-world financial decision-making they can use as adults, and they might even gain an appreciation for the effort you put into those days of carefree fun they enjoy. And of course, there are lots of technology-based approaches to learning how to budget. There are also a number of tools and games online that can teach your kids skills about how to budget, build passive income, and balance expenditures and investments over time. Of course, the best lessons in managing money come when that money's been earned, not just distributed as an allowance. If your teen is old enough, encourage them to get a part-time job, whether that's working for you at home or working at a local store or restaurant. A job allows them to learn all sorts of valuable skills like time management, budgeting, saving, paying for yourself, and even doing tax returns. More experts are now recommending actually allowing your teenager to have a credit card. If you do that, be careful. You want a credit card to be a learning tool, not to be seen as a magical source of unlimited spending power. But you might be thinking, wait, if I have to co-sign for my under 18 child to get a credit card, that means my credit score would be linked to their learning curve. No thanks. Well, it's true. You do have to be vigilant about when the card is handed over and what it can be used for. But this can be a really important learning experience. And you can help them understand things like how expensive it is in the long run to pay only the minimum amount due each month. And they also get a head start on establishing a good credit history. Just to be safe though, you want to minimize potential collateral damage during this exercise by making sure you ask for a low credit limit, like $200 or $300. Want to start your kids on the smart money path even earlier? You can initiate the concept of savings with kids younger than teens by allowing them to start small amounts of money doing various tasks and chores at home. They can put what they earn in a piggy bank, or better yet, into a clear jar so they can watch their savings pile up. Another idea for kids of any age? Teach them how to save money at the grocery store, and also how to see the real cost of items. Show your kids the tags that state the price per unit so that kids can learn the real cost of items, regardless of package size and marketing. Older kids can keep a running total on a calculator as you fill your cart. Personal finance experts agree. It's never too late to start teaching money lessons to your kids. Younger kids who learn simple money concepts will grow into teenagers who are ready for more financial responsibility, and into adults who are better prepared for the challenges of managing their money in the real world.
The Ins and Outs of Money is part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. It's produced by Ryan Stacey at Level Up, the Digital Creativity Center at the library. And Christina Wilty is our associate producer and sound editor. Music courtesy of Flannelgraph Records. Tools for taking control of your money can be found at money.mcpl.info. That's money.mcpl, as in Monroe County Public Library.info.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Boy, I'm telling you, my voicemail has been busy lately. The scammers have been trying to put the bite on the bits in my phone's digital memory. When I notice I have a new message, I usually press the button to check it. Then, when I realize it's what polite people call manure, I hit the erase button. But lately, I've been saving them up to share with you just for fun. Let's start. Have you gotten a call like this one?
$250,000 business line of credit. With the lowest rates and longest terms in the industry. So I can be reached at 949-536-8498. Or you can just go ahead and call me back on the number that popped up on your phone. Either way is fine. I should be around all day. Talk to you soon.
I know what you're thinking. I don't want to talk to anyone who sounds like that either. She probably shouldn't be drinking on top of those pills she must be taking. And even if I was in the market for a line of credit, I'm not going to borrow money from somebody who finds me. I'll do my research and find them. Then there's this happy little scam.
Problem in our server. You can call us at 855-890-4775 in order to claim your refund, or else you might get charged again because of that issue. Kindly call us on 855-890-4775. Thank you.
You notice these are all robocalls? The robot starts talking before my outgoing voicemail message has finished and the phone starts recording. So I have no idea what kind of a so-called refund is being offered, and I am absolutely not going to call them to find out. One way or another, gonifs like this are working a deal where my money goes to them, not the other way around. And finally, there's another annoying robocall you may be getting even if you don't have your own business.
If you are the business owner, please press 1 now. If your account has not been verified, customers searching for your services will not find your listing. Press 1 now to verify your listing, or press 9 to be removed from this list.
Oh, right. Press 1 to tell them you're an active telephone number and a potential sucker, so you'll get lots more robocalls. Or press 9 to tell them the same thing. You might actually be removed from this list, but you'll be added to 16 or 50 others. They probably got my name because I did have a business 15 years ago, and anybody whose records are that far out of date is nobody I want to interact with. Voicemail is a lovely thing, but it doesn't change today's safe telephone rules. If you don't recognize the number on your caller ID, don't answer. If it's a robocall, don't respond, ever, in any way. Never press a button because a voice on the phone tells you to. Never call a number to find out what it is. The erase button is your friend.
End of final message.
I only wish it were true. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Sarah Vaughn and Harrison Wagner in partnership with CATS Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish.
Dan Weathered and Sydney Foreman produced our feature and engineered today's show. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmadeke, and Danny Graff. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is produced in partnership with the Asian Cultural Center on the campus of Indiana University, Bloomington. That's Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio, coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.